Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Michael Damiani and
Brandon
Brennan
Jones
Jones,
talking about Game of
Game of
Thrones because
Thrones,
we're super
Season 8,
nerds.
Episode
The
3.
official title.
The
Oh boy.
That's the official title. Brandon Jones and Michael Damiani are big nerds who just want to talk about Game of
Yeah.
Thrones.
Hopefully everything looks and sounds okay.
And we've.
So we can just do this. We can get into it.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. Big, massive
Yes.
spoiler alert. Which is scary because it's live. People just they
Yes.
drop in and tweet, "Hey, I'm
It's in the
just
title.
I'm
It's
on
in the title of the
Twitch.tv
stream.
slash What's up?"
It's in the title of the
People are
stream.
hanging
So,
out talking about things. What?
spoilers!
And then you're like, "Are you killing that king?" Like,
"Damn it, Jones, why? I didn't know that."
Oh man.
Oh.
So yeah, last night was a big
Oh.
night. I want to start with this, Damiani, because it's so funny. So I, Sean, aka German Efficiency Clinton, I'm working out with him and we're talking Thrones, and he was just like, "What do you think is going to happen?" I thought for sure there was going to be some kind of something we missed. Something I think they, I thought they were going to sneak through the crypt. I thought like Gilly and crazy people were going to die. I knew Theon was going to die because there's no way them specifically
Man,
saying he was going to protect Bran. I was like, Theon's
can
out.
we just start with that real quick? I saw everyone saying Theon was gonna die. Like, they were absolutely convinced.
They told you.
I was like, there's still a
He
chance.
spoke Game of Thrones-erism
There's
and
still a
was basically
chance.
like,
I
goodbye.
had a little bit of hope.
The
I was
moment
like,
he and Sansa had the soup, were like, I was like, bye.
I wanted to believe Theon had
It's
a
been fun,
chance.
Theon. He saved his sister. He came back. He made his peace with Jon. He's done. He's done. That was it. It was the end of his journey. It was a great end. It feels like more people died than actually did. And they certainly got you, man. They certainly dangled that carrot the whole episode, where they're just like, "Is Sam gonna die?" Like, I can't take it.
Based Jones, I don't always like making sports analogies, but this episode to me, in terms of like feeling like how things are going and what people are gonna die, felt like it's like before the big game, like before Super Bowl, sort of
Sure.
college national championship, and like your team is Winterfell, and you're like,
Right. Yeah,
they're the
yeah, yeah.
underdogs, and
It's
like.
regional, so like, you might not be interested because you're not local, but like, man, if you got a dog in that race,
But
it's bigger than
I was like,
anything.
okay, they have a chance with the underdogs. They have a chance here. They're going against like the Patriots.
Yeah.
The Patriots are like the undefeatable team here. They're the army of the dead. And like first quarter happens, like all right, like send out the doctor. Like, here we go, baby. We got the ball first. We're going. And then like it just is like you just slowly see
They
things
even
going bad, and you're just like, oh no.
John and Daenerys were totally set up to be like the commentators. They were in the skybox, when they first started out.
Yeah, Sean and Daenerys,
Yeah,
like.
just FYI, we're gonna adhere to this, and we just might be able to do in the chat as well. Don't talk about the scenes from the next.
Yes.
Some people don't like to watch that.
We're not talking
I
about the
gobble
preview.
that up. That's a little cherry on the sundae of watching the show. Like, I appreciate that, but
X. So,
not gonna talk
we're
about it
not
right now.
mentioning, we're not talking about what the preview showed in terms of what happens next, but also if it confirms or denies whether certain people died or not, if there's any ambiguity left, we will not
Right.
talk about that either. We'll leave that to
Because
everyone seeing
I don't
episode
even
four.
remember the
Yes.
confirmations there.
Yes.
I think, I mean, really, I think we need to address the elephant in the room, which is a lot of people hate this episode, man. Like, a lot of people, I saw some people tweeting, they're like, "Seems like everyone liked it." And other people are like, from what I'm seeing, overwhelming the majority of people are like, that not only, like, you either like this episode or you don't. Like, it's hard to take a middle road because a lot of people, primarily book fans, were just like,
it feels like it's very divisive.
And I liked it, for the record.
I knew that I
I was
kind of
I what
realized that this was probably going to be like a hot button topic for the next few days, beyond just like it was a big, huge event with spoilers. Is when I started to see people come out of the woodwork to compare it to The Last Jedi. Like someone called it, they Rian Johnsoned Game of Thrones. I was like, okay, here we go. I
Yeah.
was like, all right, we're entering this zone, are we? I was like, okay. There are people out there who are not satisfied with the conclusion of this episode and what transpired in this
The conclusion
episode.
of, I mean,
Specifically the conclusion, but there's like a lot of elements of this episode being called out, and I don't want to lump it all as like this book. Fans who are calling it out and being upset that this is like the payoff, this might be the only answers they're ever getting because the books may never be finished, who
Right.
knows? But I think there are like a lot of other people who were just invested in the show,
Yeah.
who had all these crazy theories about what was going to go
It's a
down.
pretty even divide. You can kind of tell,
And it
like,
didn't meet their expectation because
yeah.
they had built something up in their head and then they're like, nope. And then we have people who are trying to argue like logic, like they're pointing out the logic flaws and like why did this happen? I can't follow this logic. That's too much. You asked me to suspend too much disbelief for this to happen. And you have people countering back and forth. You know, well, they, like, let's start with Arya. I don't want to say a lot. I'm gonna say even amount of people are saying, how the hell did Arya do what she did at the end? And then there's just as many people going, what was she doing all this time training? What do you think she was doing? She was training to be with the faceless men. She was becoming one of the deadliest killers. She fought Brienne and, like, held her own. Yeah. Like, you know, actually beat her.
The place where the Red Wedding took place, she just strolled right in there.
She snuck up on Jon in the same spot. And Jon's like, how'd you sneak up on me?
Yeah.
And, like, previous episodes, like, well, there you go. It's, like, foreshadowing. And, like, she can do that and stuff. And I see people like, well, it was plate armor. How did she pierce plate armor? It's like, well, Valyrian steel, like magic. It was like maybe Melisandre like enchanted it before she like she left. I don't know. That's the question you like that ruins it for you. Is like the knee plate armor. It's like that. Was like okay. I was like, I mean, it's Arya. She would know where to stab.
No, I mean the slam dunk. Like what I keep seeing over and over and over again is people being like, that's not the way that I thought this was going to end in terms of the Night King. And they keep bringing up, like, you know, prophecies and things that are mentioned in the books. And I keep thinking, this isn't the books, man. Like, this is so far removed from the books. And I think it's becoming clear to me that George gave them, like, a list of who lives and who dies and relatively when. Maybe, like, an order, you know, of who dies and like, who's going to make it through to what point. Maybe like a handful of some of his favorite scenes, like scenes that I envision that I really want to have happen that I would love to be a part of the show. And then I think they're just making up the rest. Like, I think this is one of those instances where like they really had, you know, a blank check to just do whatever they wanted in terms of like, he's like, he basically told him like the Night King is not going to make it to King's Landing. Like the end fight is going to be between Cersei and Jon, or it could be Cersei and Dany really. And like, so it's going to be, you know, you're going to need reconciliation with Tyrion and Cersei, with Jaime and Cersei, with, dude called it, man. But, with Sansa and Tyrion, like they have a long road still to go. And he's like, that's the end. Like, that's going to be actually reclaiming and ruling this kingdom. But it's interesting. Like, you get the episode beforehand, then some people are like, wow, episode two. And they're like, wow, that was really dull. Nothing a lot happened. And then three, they're just like, wow, they rushed that. And it's like, what? What do you want?
You know what, Jones?
It was clearly building up to something like super momentous happening. And I actually was not a big fan of her taking out the phrase in last season. Because we didn't get to see it at all. We just cut to the phrase, and it's like, oh yeah, Arya's there. And I was like, how'd she do that? Like, just in an Ocean's 11 sense. Like, I want to see her do it. You know, I want to see her actually go through it. Like, I was not...
That
was not a nice payoff for me.
They were starting to rush through things in the show.
And I don't know, I feel like this was a surprise, but they definitely built... Love that moment of Melisandre seeing her, and like, oh, you know. There's Arya, there's...
Jones, I want to say this, because it's bugged me ever since I got into Game of Thrones. I've always felt like this show is trying to be two things... And I've always felt conflicted.
Yeah.
There's always been the story about the Long Night, the Night King, what happened thousands of years ago with the Children of the Forest, the First Men, making the White Walkers, the Night Kings that have come before, apparently, and this, like, Army of the Dead prophecy. Part of the show always felt about, like, there's this supernatural threat that's, like, part of the plot.
Yeah.
And then it's the rest of the world and politics. So it's like a political show and a supernatural like war show. And I'm like, wait. And they did their best to do like kind of like that dance and balance that. And I felt like in this season, I don't know. Like I feel like it was at a tipping point where the resolution to this thing basically to me says we care more about resolving the arcs with characters and their relationships than the supernatural threat. Yes, this was a big deal, but like the real end game of Game of Thrones is not that. It's not them. It is what's going to happen in King's Landing, and that's what we care about most. And I think without enough of the blueprint from Gurm, I think it was a little too much of a tall ask for them to take this amount of existing lore and then create an ending marries it perfectly together.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah.
I feel like the showrunners decided, we can't do both. We're going to fail.
Yeah.
Let's do our best with this, like, winter battle. 100%. And then let's nail it with King's Landing at the end.
And that's the thing, is like, a lot of book fans are like, they didn't stick to the text. They didn't do what was going to happen. And it's like, I don't think Gurren laid it out. I really think they're grasping. They're like, we just don't know. Like, we don't know a lot of these crazy concepts. That, and if you look at, like, what happened to Mira Mazdur, and like, who is, if you don't remember, was the gal who was sacrificed since the end of season one, is how Dany got her dragons. Yep. This is a woman who like double crossed her, and Amanda actually reread book one, and she was like, that whole thing is crazy, like, of who really is the evil person there, whether it's Daenerys or Mira. And then like Melisandre's whole relationship and especially, Dollar said, shout out, pour one out for Dollar said. Who was a White Walker for all the 5 seconds and then crumbled. Who's the guy that kept bringing Beric Dondarrion back?
Thoros
of Myr.
I keep forgetting his name. Was the prophecy.
He didn't know what the hell he was doing. You know, he keeps saying, he's like, it works when I do this thing. And so, like, everyone's connection with magic in that world is, like, very tenuous and very confusing. And so, like, when people, like, throw prophecies at me from this world, it's like, I think it's Gurren maybe messing with you. Like, or it easily could be. He loves doing that. He loves being like, ha-ha, you thought that was going to happen. You thought the Viper was going to kill the mountain, but no. You know, and you get these moments. And I think that was, like, I think that's why... I definitely feel the sense of shock value coming from Arya. We're just going to talk about this scene. That's literally it. Like, the entire time.
No, there's such a powerful moment. We should get this one out of the way, because this is like the most important.
It was just so shocking to me. If you had paused it and turned to me and said, what's going to happen? Like, it would have taken me 80 million guesses to get to Arya's going to fly out of the mist and like try to backstab him, knowing that he's going to grab her so that she can do this little sneaky move. And just seeing everything that led up to that, all the sacrifices that were made, and I even think subtle stuff, well, we need to get into details, but subtle stuff that I think did kind of fulfill the prophecy in a way. I don't know. It's just whenever somebody talks about magic or mysticism on that show, no one ever like knows. Like, even the when we met the Children of the First Men, or what are they? The
Children of the Forest?
The Children of the Forest, yeah. Even like when Bran met them, they were kind of in the dark a little bit in terms of like what was really going on and what Bran was going to do, and you know, seeing into the future. But yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot more in that episode. Many more characters than Arya and the Night King.
The one thing I will say is, I was surprised that that's how it went down. Did not expect that was how it was going to play out. I was talking with Brandon before we went live, and I basically told Brandon at the moment of where it was about to happen, I said, this is what I thought the sequence was going to be based on what I had seen. So Jon is right there trying to get around a Viserion, the dragon that's possessed, or undead dragon, and he keeps getting stopped by the fire. And you see the Night King getting closer and closer and closer to Bran. Theon has already charged. Theon is down. And I'm like, and then I was like, time's up. And I was like, this is it. Jon is going to stand up. He's going to do a charge. Like, he's not going to care if he lives or dies, because this is it. If he doesn't try something now, he's dead. He's going to charge through. He's going to get hit by the fire, but it won't kill him because he's a Targaryen, like Daenerys, who can't die through fire. He's going to run through there. And I was like, he's going to try and charge the Night King. He's going to get stopped. But then Arya's going to be like, vault him behind him or whatever, because she was planning to do the same thing. And I thought, like, it would probably be like, Arya will be involved in this. And like, the two of them are going to take down the Night King together. This is what it's been leading up to. The two of them, like, are so intertwined and stuff. I was like, that's it. This is it. This is like the perfect thing. And in the end, yeah, it's awesome that Arya was one. I thought Arya would be involved in somehow, but she actually gets to do the fatal blow. I was like, okay, that's really cool. But also, I feel like a good transition point here is that I feel like this also speaks to the bad way they're treating Jon Snow in this show. Especially in this episode, I feel like
he's having a hard go of it.
Like, what's going on with Jon Snow here? Just like, is kind of not doing anything worthwhile. And it's like, why did he come back from the dead again?
This may be, again, speculation, sorry, but it's like giving Arya this moment makes me wonder if Arya will be in a position to kill any other big players. You know, it's like, what does she really have to do in this story? This is pretty big. Yeah. This is one of the biggest things anyone's ever done in this world.
She can kill
ever.
Anyone.
You know, it's like
no one can defeat her.
That is, yeah. That's pretty nuts.
Like, one
I love their little staff, man. But another reason I really like this episode is I just had chills this entire time, man. I just thought so many of the sequences were done so brutally and so interestingly. And I know a lot of people said the episode was too dark, which I think is nonsense. But I loved to me, like, even like skeletons and like clear CG effects, like, looked cool in this episode. Like, it just looked interesting because it was so difficult to see. And that shot of them rolling through the distance, like the moment they cut to the wide of the Dothraki, you know, in the mist,
that shot was so good.
When it cut to the wide shot, I was like, uh oh, because you could just tell, like, all those lights are going out.
I was like, yeah, why are they charging? I was like, uh oh, and then that, like, I love the reverse angle shot from watching them in the distance from behind at the front lines, and
they were on horses with flaming swords. None of that worked.
Yeah.
So now they're charging at the, you know, at the Unsullied, who are just like, I don't even know what's coming. Like,
yeah,
that was great. It was neat. It was a combination. It's something I really haven't seen that much. It's like, it was the combination of a classic fantasy war moment and horror, like raw horror. And I've just never seen. And when that wave, like, finally came out of the light, into the light, and it wasn't just like, oh, one line and then another line and another line. Like, it was World War Z. It was like an ocean. It was just a wave crashing because every zombie's running so fast that they're just shoving the zombie in front of them. And so it's this back wave that keeps bowling over the front wave. And when you see that, the eyes that first saw Rocky was like, what the hell? And he literally sees, like, a mountain. He literally sees, like, 30, 40 feet tall of just this wave, this ocean of...
I thought they were seeing, like, they get the quick flash of, like, the giant.
You think it's
the
giant?
I thought they were, when the first shot, when they're charging,
it looked like something was rising up.
The giant was in the front, and then, like, it looked like a, like, they were just, like, a wave. Yeah, a wave of undead. I was like,
that was creepy, screwed, man.
They
were just really creepy.
But before we went live, I also told Brandon that I liked the darkness in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the point. People kept saying, oh, I saw complaints afterwards. It's like, huh, okay, maybe it was something like that. But as I was watching it, I felt it's supposed to be dark. It's the Night King bringing his army, especially when he brought in, like, the snow mist. I was like, the whole point is confusion tactics. You can't see anything, especially when they're, like, the zombies are piling over the wall. They're like undead humans who, like, are wearing normal clothes. Like, you can't tell who's who. I was like, I think that's the whole point. Like, the Night King is like, I'll use it. I don't care what tactic this is. Anything I can
and
use
to defeat you. Some of my favorite effects. Whenever you were focused on one part of the castle, you would, like, look off in the distance, and it's just like it's an ocean of undead just, you know, clamoring over stuff. It's like, they're attacking from all angles.
But that's also a thing. Like, an army usually don't fight at night unless they use torches and stuff.
Right.
They do not need that. This was a great way to show we can fight in dark, pure darkness. You can't. You're screwed.
So the Night King, the episode's called The Long Night. You know, I like that Melisandre at the end walks out at the sunrise, you know. The sun rising on a new day where all these people get to live another day. I just thought it was terrifying. I thought, I saw chat, somebody mentioned that, like, the camera work definitely was trying to cover for some of the you know, what probably needed to be the more budget, you know, shots and, like, special effects and stuff.
Okay.
But again, that's just why I always give credit to this show, because they understand, like, when to strike, like, what to focus on and what. Clearly, like, you see Danny and John's ride from episode one where it's like, where they're on dragons, and, like, compared to this one, man, compared to, like, the two separate gorgeous shots we got of these dragons flying up over the clouds and, like, looking in, and then they were finally like, if we stand here, he's just going to keep doing that. He's just going to keep popping up and burning us, and then flying down and popping up and burning us. Like, we got to go get him. The fact that they can't talk, all that was wordless, like, between him and Daenerys, like, oh, there were just so many really, really powerful moments in this. Oh, the moment Sam fell, I was like, oh no, Ed, don't help him. Don't help him. I knew Ed was going to be like, hey, Sam, let me help you up.
Yeah. No, I was like, Ed. Here we go.
Because you're so clearly dying.
That also happened with his other friend on the wall back in the day when they were defending it from the wildlings.
Yeah.
There were the archers and stuff, and then he got shot through, it was a pip or whatever, got shot through through the neck and stuff. And it was also because, like, Sam was like, what? Oh, you got shot. Yeah, that was unfortunate. You know, I like that character a lot, and, you know, I was hoping they would make it through. But of all, like, There are a lot of characters who survived who I thought were not going to make it based on what I was watching in this episode.
Oh, and yeah. I thought I was surprised.
So here we go.
It looked like Grey Worm made it out.
So yes, he is there at the end. He is standing when all the undead fall down.
Right.
And the spell is broken.
Totally thought
Grey Worm is still there.
He's like inside six moments. He's in the castle. Now?
Well, yeah. Like, so when they're falling back, when the Unsullied are covering the retreat, and they're saying, light the trenches, and he's got to, like, break the last, like, you know, pathway. I thought he was, like, getting ready to, like, zoomed in on him, and he was, like, breathing hard. I was like, he's going to jump back over. He's going to break it and jump back over and join them and fight to the death. And then when he retreated with them, I was like, oh, okay. I was like, all right, you know, maybe he's, like, you know, he's important.
He's a general. You know, he's their commander. He's got to survive.
But, you know, that part was, like, the first moment I was like, I thought someone died. But inside the walls, there was Brienne, there was Jaime, there was Tormund, there was Gendry. They're all fighting either on the top of a heap of undead with them coming up.
Tyrion's, what's his name? Tyrion's guy.
Podrick.
Podrick, yeah.
Podrick as well. Ass. They're like against the wall and stuff.
Podrick's battle cry.
There's like an endless supply of undead and they're against the wall. And I'm like, this is it. I was like, at that point in the show, I was like, is this going to be total defeat? I was like, oh my gosh, they might kill everyone, and Daenerys is going to fly away with her dragon and just be like, holy shit.
I don't know if I was being totally stupid, but like, there was part of me in a scene where I was like, who knows? They might do this. Like, that would be wild, you know? There really are like four or five of them left to just do something, go to Dorne and get reinforcements.
Yeah, I was like, they're going to, like, she's going to
go see if there's any other Khalasars riding around the desert.
I thought the show was going to be like, the next episode was going to, like, if what had played out, I thought everyone dies. Yeah. I thought she was going to literally fly back to King's Landing and, like, kneel before Cersei and be like, we just got annihilated. There's nothing left. Yeah. Like, and you have no hope either. Like, we're done. I was like, oh, wow. That would, like, the fear in Cersei's face when she's like, I had this great plan. I'm going to kill all of you now. Like, oh, well, they're that bad. We're screwed. But that didn't happen. Said she's fighting with Jorah Mormont outside and stuff, and, like, they're getting overwhelmed. And even Jon, like, I think the moment where I realized, no, they're not going to kill important characters, two important of characters right now, is when Jon has a chance. So Daenerys blasts the Night King with fire breath. And you're like, did it do it? And when it holds on that shot for so long, you're like, okay.
He's not dead.
He might be hurt, but he's not dead.
Yeah.
And then he just like smiles back. And then Jon's like, okay, that's it. I'm going to try Valyrian steel now. I thought he was going to make it and the steel was going to fail. I'm like, oh, wow. He can't be killed by what they thought.
Yeah.
Instead, he's charging him. The Night King stops, turns around, and it's like slowly lifting his hands. And like Jon pauses. I'm like, dude, keep running. Like, why are you stopping? Yeah. And then he's surrounded by a giant field of undead. And in the next shot, he's got like two or three dudes he's fighting. And I'm like, wait, where'd this giant... He's like dead. He's totally dead. I thought Melisandre was there because he's going to have to revive Jon again or something because he's going to die a second
time. Jon has the Force. There's something about Jon. Jon and Sam are both...
Sam, like...
comically...
Apparently, just like lying down on bodies is like... good enough to
when
survive?
It was just raining them, man. When they were just running through, you know, corridors. And
yeah, how do you feel about the sequence of Jon running through and he sees like Sam there, and then like just goes. He looks again, but then he keeps going because he's like, time's up. I got to do something. And he sees everyone like failing, and he's like, doesn't stop to help. He just keeps going. I was just like, whoa, that was intense. But I was like, no one of those people died. It's still okay.
Yeah, they got you.
Yeah, how do you... there's some things we need to talk about. The Hound. The Hound's role in this episode.
The fire, man. That guy didn't like
got
fire.
Got scared and like... But it wasn't just fire this time. When Beric Dondarrion confronted him, he's like, Clegane, we need you now.
Yeah.
He goes, don't you see it's hopeless?
Yeah.
We're fighting death. And he goes, tell that to her. Yeah. And he's like... Freaking Arya is like destroying everyone, like rolling over like zombies or undead and stuff down the stairs. But like, even as like badass as she is, like just struggling at the end because like, no matter who you are, like against like ungodly numbers, your stamina, endurance, like you're gonna wear out.
Yeah.
And like, there's nothing, and they don't.
Well,
it's like the Terminator.
He's not wrong. Like they win that fight because they you know eliminate the Night King. But like they hadn't. Yeah, they would have. They were all.
Oh yeah, if Arya had like not thought to drop that and stabbed him, like she could have easily lost there.
Yeah.
Like here's a thing that gets criticized about that scene, and in this episode as well. I'll come back to the Hound in a second, but The Night King has his White Walkers, the generals, the bearded ones with the spears. They don't really do anything in this episode. They just hang out there. They're just, like, standing on their horses, yeah. even when Jon flies out at them, because yeah. then that, like, storm comes. And then when they're there, none of them, like, do anything or react. Like, they're just, like, hanging out there. So it's like one of them could have, when Arya's leaping out, one of them might have seen her and been like, psh, yeah. dead. Like, that could have, they were very, like, that was, like, plot armor luck that they ended up winning that. Like, it could have easily have gone, you all are dead. Anyone who can try and retreat, you know?
The thing that I like about Arya, and that's the thing about the phrase, like, where her sneaking in, I was like, I would love to see a little bit more of that. But the thing that, I'll give Arya a pass for a lot of the stuff that she's able to do in this episode, is, like, this is her home. This is, like, she's completely on home turf right now, especially that with the wars. You know, and, like, having her have that moment with Jon, you know, where they, you know, are reunited, he gives her the knife, like, right where they're standing, right where she eventually takes that knife and takes the king out. I thought that was cool, and I thought it is a superhero moment, but I don't know. It's just so satisfying. And I think one thing that I thought this morning when I was getting up and getting ready was, like, the Starks have had, like, what, like, 4 wins? Like, in, like, 8 seasons? So it's, like, this idea that, like... one of the other things, too, that I felt like was just the show creators just rubbing it in my face, being like, everyone's going to lose so hard, is when the dragon lands on Winterfell and just shreds it. You know, he's just knocking walls, and Jon's like, where am I going to go? And he's clearly just like, Winterfell's over. It's like, no one's going to want to live here anymore. And yeah, and the crypt, I mean, there's just so many signs.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the crypt stuff yet.
Oh, I'm telling you.
I mean...
Sansa and Tyrion, man, I'm shipping them.
Yeah, like...
Not in a romantic sense, but they're going to rule.
That was a... Yeah, that was... I believe. That was one of the more emotional scenes. I mean...
Really interesting music, too. I think it was like a piano, or it was like a... some kind of like plucking, like, string instrument. And it was so different than anything else that they played. And,
They did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, them, like, holding hands, and, like, they think, like, they're them coming to realization, like, this might just be not just the end of us, but of everything. Like, this could be it.
And I had an interesting exchange with Amanda, because I was trying to get one or two of her opinions in this, but Sansa tells Tyrion, you were the best of them. And I was like, and I like that, because, you know, she means, you know, he's, you know, the one of the best people that she's met. And Amanda was like, I think she means Lannisters. And I'm like, I don't think she means Lannisters. I think she means everybody she's met since she left Winterfell. Like, every single person she's had to deal with. Think about it, when she comes back, all the people that she's trusted, all the people that have betrayed her.
As, like, she said,
that's not a Stark. You know, that's not my family. Like, honestly, you never wronged me, really. You know, you never did anything. Like, you were just around everything that I hated. You know, you were surrounded by pain for me.
And for all of Tyrion's mistakes...
I love them together. Such interesting
characters. Her or Jorah Mormont in, like, the episode or before literally said, yes, people make mistakes, but the difference is this man Tyrion learns from them.
Yeah.
He uses them. Like, he actually grows and becomes better because of them.
I love when she comes.
Like, very few people in this day and age do that.
Yeah. I love when she enters the crypt and... You know, it's like, I remember her coming in, and I'm just thinking, oh, it's Sansa, she's in the crypt. And it's like, oh, wait, no, she's the queen. She'll probably say something. You know, like, they're all going to wonder, like, what's going on? You shouldn't be down here. You should be celebrating upstairs, right? And she doesn't even say anything. And she just, like, looks down at Tyrion, and Tyrion just, like, whew, and it takes another swing. Like, here we go.
There's a momentary belief that she might do something that was, like, a throwback to the... Battle of Blackwater Bay.
Okay.
When she was down there with Cersei, like, something she learned from Cersei, like, you're supposed to be, like, the inspiration, so they'll tell tales of your courage and stuff. I was like, is there gonna be, like, a throwback to, like, that part? And, like, no, not really. Not that I could tell. Like, because I was like, I've always been afraid Sansa might go down the path of becoming another Cersei, because she's seen how, like, the world's cruel, like, chewed her up, spit her back out, and, like,
sure, yeah,
and she's like, well, you know, Cersei was right about everything.
But what Cersei clearly lacked, I mean, you line the two of them up, and it's so obvious what their faults are. Like, Cersei hated her family, hated her dad, hated her brothers, hated, you know, like, obviously she's in a romantic relationship with Jaime, but she, like, resented everything. Like, she resented her friends growing up, she resented, like, you know, being treated, you know, you know, not as regally as any man would have been in her same situation, and so she just didn't have that family support. And then, you know, the Starks, like the Brady Bunch, man, like they're a tight unit. Even someone like Jon, who's a bastard, and now proven to be I like that they didn't play that up too much, like that, you know, Daenerys wasn't like, I don't want to talk about this right now, John. Like, they kind of, that was there, you know, that little tension. But then once they realized what they were going up against with the Night King, just that he, like, right at the end of episode two, was like, oh, BTW.
Yeah. But yeah,
before we maybe die and stuff.
Yeah, speaking of dying, so Jorah Mormont.
Yeah.
He does go down.
Yeah.
Protecting Daenerys. Pretty much is like his
dream. Again, yeah, not much else you can do. That worked out pretty well for
probably
him.
Probably, like, all he ever wanted out of life was either end up with her or die protecting her.
Didn't even say anything. Oh.
Well, he said, no, at the end he said, ow, he goes, I'm hurt or something, or it hurts. He goes, I think I'm hurt. And then he dies. Oh. And it's like,
I gotta rewatch that. It seemed like he didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Which to me is killer. You know, just if someone's like, they're so injured they can't actually communicate.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could see, like, you know...
Drug, come back in. I shook off those zombies, by the way. Sorry. Sorry, I was near... that's my bad.
Yeah.
I should have taken off. That one zombie was chewing on me, and I was trying to get him off, and then there were so many.
Yeah, landing with Drogon was one of the weirder things to me. Well, and I was like, take off, like start flying, like do a barrel roll, like something. Yeah. Shake him off. I was like, what are you doing? And he eventually does, but like.
but here's the thing, and this is the difference between if you go back, if you're done with Game of Thrones, you're like, oh, it's really cool. And maybe 5 or 6 years from now, when it's all over, book six comes out, maybe, and you're like. Yeah, I think I might reread those. It might be tempting after you read these five books, go watch the show again, and you'll notice a lot of stuff, and you'll be like, oh, that's right. And even when you're reading the books, you're like, Marine, I know what that is, you know, like, because a lot of that Daenerys stuff really, you know, bleeds together if you just read the books. It's hard to follow, like, with one city versus another. I can't remember the point I was making. But just specifically, where we're going with the story, those differences.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you can sense that on the show, and they make that shift. When I talked about on reaction shots recently, I compared it to like literally being in a convertible and somebody just hits the gas. And you're like, whoa! Like, it felt like the moment they got past book five, the showrunners were like, finally, let's just do it. And so not only is the story being told so much faster, but you can draw a straight line between this happened and then that led this to happen. Whereas when you're getting in the books, it's like a lot more convoluted. Things happen before you really understand them. It's messier, you know, but in a good way. There's just so much going on, so much intrigue, so many characters, where it's like, they're like, well, we gotta have Jorah die. So, you know, Dany's got to get isolated. How does she do that? Drogon leaves her. Why does he do that? Oh, imagine a dragon. Like, visually, I'm sure they were probably really wrapped up in it. Like, imagine all the walkers, you know, like, climbing all over Drogon. And now you're worried about Drogon, too, without even realizing, like, why would he do... The dragons do some dumb stuff sometimes.
Yeah, Jones, sometimes I do wonder... I mean, it was a nice change of pace, but I also wonder if they went too far to the other extreme of, like, we're racing too fast to the finish line now. And because, like, think of season six... Season 7 and Season 6 on The Kristens were, characters are jumping across the world at a pace that used to take, like, multiple episodes. Because it's like, isn't that halfway across the world? Yeah. And, like, one shot they're here, and the next shot they're like Varys and Littlefinger's magic teleporting.
In book 6 would be, like, some, you know, long-ass scene in Traitor's Bay or something of, like, him talking to somebody that'll slightly tease at some Cersei chapter in the next book or something. You know, it's like, that's how the Game of Thrones books are written. They have all that padding. And not only is it not necessary for the story that they want to tell on the show, it involves characters that they don't even have on the show. And so they're like, you know, there's no point going back there. It's interesting that the intros to all of the episodes of this season are, like, Winterfell, King's Landing. Done.
I mean, I think I think at this point it's like, that intro is pretty much this is late. We laid it out for you. We didn't lie to you. Like, here it is. We didn't talk about Lady Mormont's death. Taking out the giant.
You can't imagine Amanda's reaction to that, dude. I mean, she just, like, yeah, she started jumping up and down. She thought that was so amazing. And they really set you up for it with him just whack and her, you know, like, moving out of the way when he first comes in. You think about, like, what she did with that character, and I think that was, like, I think it was fan service, but, like, when you had the aerial shot of the two of them, like, it made sense to me because it was like the smallest character in the show defeated the largest character on the show. It was David and Goliath. Like, that was awesome. And in a really quick way to put it in there, and have it be meaningful, but not have it like, what, you know, like the story is totally pausing for 10 minutes to do this. I thought that was just enough. a lot of my critiques, like really nitpicky stuff with this, and even with, I'm not going to talk about it at all, but with Endgame this weekend with Avengers, it's like not necessarily decisions that are made, but how much time do we spend? If we only have an hour and 20 minutes, if we only have 3 hours and 1 minute, or whatever the running time is, like why are we spending so much time here? And so it makes perfect sense to me in episode two that like we're spending time at Winterfell getting to know all these people, because not only does it up the, you know, the drama of just like when, you know, Brienne got knighted, I was like, damn, she's so going down next episode. And like, yeah. No, she made it. But it makes you think that. To have that character get snuffed out so quick, but just have this great, you know, it's like a little victory. You know, I don't necessarily like turn to the tide of that battle, but like, I thought it was great. I just like the way that all
ended. One thing, I saw something in chat real quick before I make a counter that, someone talking about Theon's death and like how they felt like, they said they felt Bran killed Theon. He could have saved Theon and just told him to stay put.
I got an opinion about that.
Yeah, my take on that is like, listen, Theon wanted his honor back. He wanted to do something to regain his honor, and he knew Bran saying, thank you, you're a good man. And
that's
him
everything to Theon, man.
And he like goes,
this guy used to be real.
I don't think I don't think he wanted to live a long life. I think he had just been so destroyed and stuff that it's like, listen, if I can die with my honor and regaining it, that's where I want to like end at.
Yeah.
And I feel like that in his mind, that's what he was doing. He had no, like, he knew he had no chance, but it's like, listen, like, that's everything. Like, he has finally become like Theon Greyjoy he wanted to be. Ironborn, but also like Stark, also protecting the family he loves, the home, his real home, and, you know, charging death. Like, he's like, I don't care. Like, him standing there, and if he, like, let's say he just survived. Everyone's gonna be like, you didn't, like, why'd you stand by Bran? You know, like, you didn't try and, like, fight off, and, like, you know, why'd you leave? Like, there would be some people who might criticize him. It's just, again, another, like, kind of like chiseling at, like, you know, him trying to, like, what he was trying to build back up. And I think that was like his, like, the ultimate act for him to do that. Like, it didn't seem, it was a little cliche in hand, like, okay, he's charging, but like, what else was he gonna do there? It's like, he's no other weapons. It's like,
yeah, it's just showing the Night King, I'm not afraid of you. Like, yeah. like men, yeah. Like, if you want to throw bodies at us, we'll throw bodies back at you, man. Like, we don't care. And you know, it's much more profound when we do it than when you do it, because you're actually physically in control of all these people. I want to loop this into, I think, a lot of the criticisms and probably questions that we have coming up, which is about Bran just, you know, warging out and flying all over the place. Yeah. And I saw some people tweeting about that. It's like, what are you doing, Bran? He's just watching. Like, Bran knows exactly what's going to happen. Like, Bran knows that they're going to lose a lot of people and that the Night King's going to cruise in after a tough battle with, you know, Daenerys and with Jon, and that Theon's going to sacrifice himself. And that, because when you think about it, like, Theon's like, I'll protect you. And he just kind of looks at Theon like, okay, you know, and he's like, all right. And then he knows Arya's going to come out and the Night King. And so it's, I think a lot of this is part of, like, the confidence you think of, like, how did Arya do that? How did she sneak up on him? Like, because so many people died, because they, like, leveled Winterfell, because, like, he won so handily. And you say, like, his teammates, like, why wasn't he doing anything? He's like, because Nighting's a cocky dude, man. That, like, long slow-mo shot where he's, like, coming in and then just, like, walks up next to Bran and stares at him for a good, like, 30 seconds before he even, like, goes to start to reach for his sword. Like, he's milking it. He loves it. And he's got all the time in the world. That's why he's waited this whole time. That's why he takes these slow march with everybody. Like, he loves it. He just loves feeling that power and, you know, exerting his power over people. And so it's like he needed to play into that for that ruse, for Arya, for him to realize, like, the last person I'm expecting is that girl that, oh, yeah, I just sensed 5 seconds ago is sneaking up on me, which is why I'm going to spin around and grab her neck and then show her, make an example in front of everybody. And he's just not expecting this little girl to be that good, you know, to have that move and get it, like, right where it needed to. And people were like, how did it get through the armor? Like, maybe she knows where that is, man. Maybe she just watched him when he walked in and was like, right there. Like, that's exactly where I'm going to stab him. Like,
she is an expert in killing.
So, again, that makes what Theon did even more heroic, because he kind of threw himself at this threat and showed that, like, anybody, Bran, anyone, all of us, Jon, like, we will all, at certain death, try to defend it because it is what's right. And Arya's like, yeah, but...
Yeah,
I'll sneak up behind you.
No.
Gow.
I saw people come asking, like, what Bran was doing and stuff. And listen, like, I want to... Like,
Ghost didn't do a thing. Ghost kicked ass, okay. Man. Ghost was
Ghost
there.
On the front line.
Yeah.
I want to actually do a criticism before we get to some questions here. So, as much as, like, I feel like this episode delivered on, like, the tension, the build-up, I do feel... on a personal level, I had some personal expectations.
Sure.
And they weren't met. I'm not as vocal as like, man, this was like the worst thing ever. I'm not so hateful. I feel like on some of like the things not fulfilling my expectations, but I do want to share some of those because I don't want to like seem like I was completely positive about it. Right. There were some letdowns. Yeah, let's start. Brandon Worgan. I thought when he heard from the first three-eyed Raven, "You'll never walk again, Bran, but you will fly." I was like, "Well, yeah, you can fly if Raven." I thought he was gonna warg into a dragon at some point in the series. I was like, "He is gonna take control of one of the dragons." And you know what? I thought when
three episodes left,
I thought with the Night King when he took over a dragon, like, "Oh, it's probably gonna be a battle, and he's gonna like warg into it to take over and like screw it over and stuff to help them defeat him." I was like, I had some expectation that he was gonna warg into like. Okay, and it never happened. I was like, okay, that's a little bit of a bummer. So that was it. Beric Dondarrion, he keeps getting brought back to life for what purpose?
Right.
To stand in a doorway to like buy Arya like 10 seconds of time. I mean, that did it. That could have been Arya dying, and so it did do something, yeah. But.
It's not as it's like Barristan the Bold getting
yeah. It's
getting,
like wow, you know, we did all this build up for you. Like, we did all this build up. Like at least Melisandre like did some meaningful stuff. She tried to give the Dothraki purple weapons. Essentially, they went from gray to like purple. Like here you go, you got some legendaries now. Here you go. She lit the trench. That was a great scene. Her trying to chant.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, wait, does she really not like? Is her power done? Did she really never have power?
She doesn't know. Like that's again, yeah, that's part like of that's why that's cool. Where it's a surprise every time. Like,
and then finally confronting Arya and being like, "Here's what you need to hear because this is what needs to happen." I was like, "All right." And then tossing up her stone. When she tossed up her stone, everyone said it its light went out. Then she died. I was like, when she tossed it in the ground, it's cracked. It's damaged. Like it's clear. It has like been overused. Like she. The last of her power, because we've seen before, she's had to take it off, like either the recharge or stop using it to maintain her glamour over her. And she dies finally. She just like fades the dust.
What a button, dude. At the end of the AND scene. You know?
Yeah. right at the end. That at least fulfilled some of my expectations with her, like what she was going to do. But yeah, like there's just a lot of things in general that didn't come to be. Like
the Onion Knight coming out to
yeah, like what? To take her like, out what's didn't. The deal? Like, what is like? Jon Snow organized everything, but was that really it? Was he the one who was needed to do that? Could no one else have like organized everyone into like a final battle? Was like, what's his greater purpose? Like, there's still something
to look at it. Yeah. And something that I think is worth noting that like this was the Lannisters and the Wildlings and the Night's Watch and the Dothraki and the Unsullied and the Targaryens. And the Mormonts and all of them gathering together to save, you know, the realm of men. And like that's pretty sweet. You know, so like it sucks that, you know, we have to frame it as, you know, in terms of a show, because I think you can kind of dig deeper. You definitely can dig deeper, in the case of books, but we're already at 45 minutes. We'll probably get to some questions.
Yeah, let's get to some questions.
We've got a meeting coming up. We're probably
just wanted to say that. Yeah, we don't have too many questions actually. And I think we actually talked about some of these. So like yeah, I think we actually talked about this first question. Yes. I don't think we need to...
But it's worth mentioning.
Okay, go ahead.
I just want to read these because thank you for leaving questions. How do you guys feel about the White Walker lieutenants? I felt that they could have better used in having them lead different fronts or fighting many heroes. It would be nice to see Theon at least take out one of on the way or Jon to fight them to substitute for our desire for the Night King 1v1, which wouldn't happen. Yeah, I think it was the cockiness of the Night King.
Oh, yeah.
I think he was like, no, I got this.
Thanks for that, man.
Greetings, gentlemen. Just wanted to discuss the score in this episode. Not many people care for soundtracks, but that's the first thing I tend to notice in TV shows or movies. Take it easy, fellas. Yeah, specifically the highlight moment really stood out, and I was like, ooh, whoever.
It was a really good soundtrack for this.
I've seen the guy in concert, but I can't remember. I can maybe write his name down, but I don't know how to pronounce it.
I love this episode soundtrack. It was really good.
And I also liked Melisandre's theme we haven't heard in a while. And it was fun that came in twice. It came in when she first showed up. And it came, I love that I saw her from a distance. When we first were like, who's that? And it came in. I was like, oh, is that Melisandre?
Yeah.
When she went out at the end, it was this very somber, like very low energy version of it. And it was I'm a sucker for that stuff.
Thank you, Oscar, for that.
Oscar from Platinum Adventures. Are you bothered by the amount of plot armor in episode 3?
Oscar was the question before. Sorry.
Zach Jennings. Are you bothered by the amount of plot armor in episode 3? It seemed like they intentionally made us think some were going to die. Danny on the ground. How the heck did Jorah get there? Only to be saved last minute. Love, respect, Zach Jennings. Yeah, it was to me that Jorah didn't bother me as much as I liked it when John came in and saw everybody being crazy. But we cut back to him a couple times. He was just like, "All right, come on." Like, I hate when stuff gets down to like the second. You know, it's just like it's obviously, I don't need to ratchet it up that much for me to be impacted by it.
Jamie, Sam, Brienne, like everyone who was like in the courtyard who didn't die, Torn. Like, obviously, at least at this point, I have to believe. They are going to do something. All of them will do, and individually or maybe together, something important between now and over the next three final episodes. Like they have something coming. Otherwise, what was the plot armor for?
Steve S., do you think the Night King will return somehow? No, but I think he might.
This is what I'm seeing a lot of people now who are unhappy. That's the other thing, too, is that like, they're thinking this was all a ruse. They're like, no, there's more than one Night King.
I don't think it's a ruse. Like, I don't think he did this intentionally to like ha-ha at them. I think this sucks. I think he lost like a lot of forces, but I wouldn't be surprised if he sent another army somewhere, or it was totally possible that he could have done that. So like maybe the last battle will be, you know, the good guys versus the bad guys versus the undead, like kind of a trio.
Yeah, well, that's what people were hoping, that Army of Dead would reach King's Landing and that would be the grand finale, and wanting to see like the deals people are gonna have, like, all right, it's your backs are really against the wall.
Right.
Are you gonna like work with each other? And like what will be the outcome from that chaos?
Right.
And now that we potentially might not get that, people think, I see some people viewing as the next three episodes as like it's clear cut. I see so many people saying, well, Cersei's done, because they're you know, either or one of the others done. Like it's either or, and that's it. And to me, I'm like, why are there three episodes left that are gonna be 120 minutes each? There's a lot to happen still. There's still more to come. Maybe not in the Night King saga, but, you know, in the political saga.
Question from Nathan. Do you think fan theories interfere too much with people's expectations? I was reading a review for this episode, and it was reviewed poorly, largely because certain fan theories didn't happen. It seems pretty unfair.
Sorry, 80 minutes each. Thank you, chat.
I think, it depends, because there's a fine line between hints at the show and fan theories. So it's one thing if the show is directly stating something is going to happen. It'd be weird to go back on that flashback we saw of Ned as a young soldier finding, you know, baby John, and then be like, what? No, it didn't happen. And you're like, wait, what? That's just poor writing. But it's like if you're like, I have an idea. You know, like, I think Sansa and Tyrion are going to rule Westeros at the end of all of this. And if you, like, say that, oh, yeah. Dude, Game of Thrones spoilers, are you prepared?
I'll watch it.
Okay, cool.
Huber just walked into it like, oh, wait, Huber?
Yeah. Huber just strolling in, a guest star.
Don't mind me.
Did you like the episode?
I did.
Just a yes or no, he liked it. He liked it.
Mostly.
But yeah, Jones, I think because people were right on the Jon Snow theory, right, about his parents, everyone's like, oh, we're going to be right about everything. Right. And like, listen, this does happen. It's fun to theorize and speculate about things, but at the same time, when it doesn't come to pass, I feel like it sometimes clouds some people's
judgment.
Especially
theories based on prophecies and stuff. Yeah. It's like, that stuff could be wrong intentionally. Like, that could be Gurm messing with your head, you know, like, because he wants you to have those anticipations, man. Like, this is what the show does. It's the spiciness of Game of Thrones, because it's like, right in the gut, you know, like, they love it. They can do that with who is supposed to swing the sword or who is supposed to be the hero, and it's like, nope, it's them.
You don't want people to be able to guess your plot. Like, if it's so obvious then that's like, that's not going to be enjoyable. Yeah. People aren't going to be excited for it. Yeah, and like,
I'll never forget my buddy Garen, who I love to death, who's the best, who was into Game of Thrones way before I was. And so when I finally read all the books, he was like, all right, finally, we can talk about this. And I was like, I remember we were like talking when Dance of Dragons came out, because we both read that at the same time. So we were like, okay, and like throwing theories. And I remember like one day we were talking about Azor Ahai and you know, the Jon holding Lightbringer and all this stuff in the Melisandre. And he was like, he lays it out pretty well. It's pretty boring, actually. He's so cocky. And it's like, he's so pissed that he's like, well, the books will do it. And maybe they won't either. You know, you never know. But this idea that like all of these little breadcrumb trails are going to lead to a specific event. They're going to lead to something. But whether that's what you thought it was going to be or not. Yeah, I really try to not to get wrapped up in that.
I told Brandon before we started streaming, like, this all started with freaking Lost. People making up crazy Lost ending theories, and then none of them were true. And everyone raged weekend, about right?
It happened already.
What weekend, dude?
Dude, it was the best weekend.
You brought up Gotham on Huber Syndrome, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was the best. Woo! The best weekend.
I watched some trailer for it that, like, was basically the entire episode. And perfect. I was like, cool, thanks.
Yeah, you got it. Awesome.
Hi, allies. Just wondering what your thoughts were on the lack of spoken dialogue in this episode. It was my wife's first time watching Game of Thrones. Terrible, I know. And she asked me if anybody ever talks or if it's just music and violence. Love and respect, Jesse Landry. She's not wrong. But I think that's what this show does so well is they make such a spectacle of these tiny moments. And, like, you just seeing, again, just, man, just the long seconds. They felt really long that they held on Sansa and Tyrion. Just like, what are we going to do? I don't know. You know, Varys, man. And them getting around the corner and seeing Varys with all of the women basically being like...
The look between him and Tyrion.
What do you expect me to do?
Like, all they've been through, all they plotted, like, to try and save the realm. It's like, this might... Oh, that was like... I was like, yo, this is dark. This is the end. But this is funny because... when my roommate first saw an episode of Game of Thrones, he walked away and said, like, is it all just talking and nothing happens? Because it's usually sitting around. This episode is, like, opposite of what...
I think even though the next one's an hour 20, like, I think the
it's
next 80
one, minutes, actually.
I think the next one... Yeah, hour 20.
Did you guys talk about
this? Oh, hour 20. Desire? Gosh. That's why I was getting 120.
Some of the best sound I've ever heard in my life.
Every time hit, when Brian, like, boom! Like, a linebacker just gets clocked by that front line that comes rushing in. Like,
such good sound.
That was intimidating. They did a really good job. There was one shot of Tormund where he, like, turns and looks back and the dragon is behind him. Like, you can have something like a dragon mowing down zombies and it's like, it's in the background. It's like, you know, Drogon just took out 200 of them. But anyway, but onto this scene in the forefront. That was really impactful. But I think I'm anticipating at least half of the next episode to be like, and... breathe, and then okay, then in the next one we're gonna fight. Looking at the next three, I'd be interesting if, like, the last episode is just like an epilogue, because it seems like, how long is it gonna be until we rally whoever's left
every final episode has always been like an epilogue type episode for each season. The craziest stuff usually happens the penultimate episode. Ride's halfway over.
Yeah, that was epic.
Wait, are you guys done?
Yeah, we're done. That was 55 minutes.
Do you think the person will come back, or they're gone? We'll come back.
I think he's got another trick under his sleeve.
Okay.
Cool. Somebody else.
Huber, even if it's not in, like, this show, there have been more than one Night King. Because that's what the prophecy was based on. Yeah. The person who Azor Ahai wielded Lightbringer killed the original Night King.
Got it.
So, like, obviously someone else can potentially become a Night King somewhere down the line, but, like, of no impact on this show.
Let me rephrase that. I don't think the Night King is coming back, but I wouldn't be surprised if they had some kind of, if there was some twist. Because I thought that was going to happen this whole episode.
Do you want crazy, everybody? Do you want crazy theories to get you back in? Here we go.
We're Easy Allies. Thanks for watching. If you don't want crazy, now's the time to back out. But, okay, crazy.
Here we go. So, Qyburn has affected...
Oh, Qyburn, you mean?
Qyburn.
Who brought the mountain back.
Brought the mountain back. Saw the undead... And, like, was, like, fascinated with it.
Yeah, yeah.
What if he's found a way to harness the power of what brings the dead back to life? And he creates an undead army down in King's Landing.
Qyburn is the new Night King?
And yes! In the new Night King, but, like, Cersei has an army of the dead.
That's pretty hype.
Boom!
That's really hype.
There you go.
That's good, dude.
There's your
face. He puts in, like, blue contacts.
Yeah, like, because the mountain's face is, like, all purple. It's like, they look like undead. And that's Clegane Ball. They have to kill the mountain as a new Night King.
But, like, the hound gets bit, and so he becomes, like, a zombie. And so it's, like, two zombie Cleganes against each other.
All right, there you go. That's your crazy fan fiction. I just want to get everyone hyped again.
Oh, pretty hyped. Nice to have Huber in right for the end, man.
Sorry.
I don't know why I'm doing that.
Thanks, Damiani. This is really fun. We'll do this after every episode. And then we'll also do a spoiler mode. So you'll get the Damiani Jones freak out. And then, we're doing it. We should tell them that right now. We're doing the last episode.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday night.
So I'm going to be at an event that Monday, Tuesday after the final episode. So rather than waiting till like Wednesday, that Sunday night, May 19th, after the final episode airs, Jones and I will come to the studio. I'll actually already be here. We'll get together at the studio, and we will do this live, like, right after the episode, sometime after the episode airs. So you won't have to even wait till Monday.
So yeah, be careful, because some people can't watch it until Monday or watch it late Sunday night. So
yeah.
Apologies if you got to watch the archive.
I will put spoilers in like the title 3 times for the stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Woo! How many tears were shed when Jorah went down?
I only cried once, and I think it was when oh, you know what it was? You know what I started welling up? Because honestly, I think it was one of the most powerful moments in the entire show. Theon, you're a good man.
Yeah.
Like, because that's like, was Theon struggling like the entire time? That was one of the biggest victories of that show, is him just being like, hey, because Bran doesn't speak for anybody, man. Like, for him actually to say, oh, wait, oh, right, this is the part where you die. And you just imagine Bran, it was great when Theon walked up to him. Like, imagine Bran just like hearing a million voices at the same time. And then Theon addresses him and he's like, what? Oh, wait, this is now. Okay, I'm sorry. What were you saying, Theon? And he's like, hey, I'm sorry about whatever. And he's like, dude, just chill. Don't worry about it. I don't worry about those things anymore. And he's had that moment with like everybody. He had it with Jon. He had it with Arya. He had it with, you know, with Sansa. And now he's having it with Theon. Just this kind of check of like, wow, what happened to you, Bran? That he's so much wiser than all of them now. And just this like release, and then he turns around and charges. And I was like, I can't take it. Especially after Endgame, I was like, I can't. This weekend, too much. All right, we got a meeting. We got to wrap up.
We'll see you all next time. Thank you for everyone submitting questions.
Thanks for chat. Thanks for questions.
Yeah, I know we got a ton of questions. We covered most of them in the discussion, so that's just how it goes. But we'll do it again next week. So until then, see you all later.